This is Marsha Brugman. This is Monday, June 27th, 1977. Today we're continuing our project on the oral history of the Parkland area, and we're looking into some of the histories of the businesses in the Parkland area. One of the first that comes to mind is the Reynolds Aluminum Company, which is on 28th and Hale, between Hale and Grand. Today we're visiting with Mr. Matt Davis, and can you tell me what your position is with the company now?
I'm on a leave of absence from Reynolds Metals Company, and my position with the union is the president business representative of Local Number 155 of the Aluminum Workers International Union, and I'm also a vice president of the Aluminum Workers International Union. Our home office is located in St. Louis, Missouri.
When you said that you were on a leave of absence, can you not be an officer with the union and work for the company at the same time, or is the union business just occupying you full time?
The union business occupies the full time. At one time we had 3 full time officers, and now we only have 2 full time officers and the secretary. But it does require 100% of our time. We have, of course, in addition to the union business that the people would be aware of, we also have an evaluation system that's a constant challenge to the union to keep the necessary preventative measures to keep that thing from falling.
What year did you come to work for Reynolds?
I come to work in the year of 1940.
Could you give me a little, brief history or background of the Reynolds Company prior to your coming to work?
The way I understand it, after I come to work, the Reynolds Metals Company had been in operation for a number of years prior thereto. In the department that I've worked at, in Plant 1, that's at 28th and Hale, I worked with a number of employees who had been long-term employees for the company at that time. Of course, that was in the company's infancy. We didn't have insurance policies or pensions or any of the union conditions as we now know it. Although they were a good company to work for, as the standards of the various companies went in them years. The Reynolds Metals Company has never been an anti-union company. They've always accepted the unions after they was recognized, and has bargained with them down through the years and kept pace with the economy of the country. I personally have been associated with Mr. Reynolds Sr. up until the days that he passed away, and I have personally been associated with Mr. Reynolds Jr., our most recent president of the company and chairman of the board. And all of the Reynolds presidents since the time I have been associated with the company. The Reynolds boys, both David Reynolds and Richard Reynolds, and I believe J. Lewis Reynolds, have all worked in Plant 1 as employees, working and getting their start, working as production people.
Did their father command that of the boys, I wonder?
I don't think so, really. It was possibly for them to get to know the business. And the 4 boys are still active with the company as vice presidents in charge of the various divisions. But many of the workers can remember them as fellow workers in the plant.
That's really interesting. They didn't start out at the top then. They were right down here on 28th and Hale as production workers.
Production
That's
workers.
Interesting.
Yes, sir. And many of the people, well, there's very few of them left that can recall the days of working right next to them, but some of our retired people do recall it.
Mm-hmm. You think that made for or accounts for some of the loyalty that people have toward the Reynolds family?
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. For many, many years, Mr. Reynolds Sr. would come and tour the plant and come in and shake the hand to the employees. And after the union was formed, sometime in later years, as he would come through the plant and greet a lot of his old acquaintances, I can say that in his generous mood, he caused the union a lot of problems because of the fact that he would listen to the people, and sometime he would grant them privileges that he didn't grant to the union.
Yeah.
It caused some problems. Problems weren't of such magnitude
yeah.
that they couldn't be explained, you know. But his close associate with the people was something else. And I can say at this, after the many years that I have been associated with the Reynolds Group, the executive offices of the company are never closed to us. We can call them on the phone, visit them, and we are never denied an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes from the all the way up to the president and the various vice presidents of the many divisions of the Reynolds Metals Company.
It seems like it's an unusual situation.
Yes, it is.
It's terrific.
It's something that we don't abuse because we feel very strongly that it is a privilege to be able to talk to the executives of the company when needed,
mm-hmm.
and it has avoided a lot of embarrassing situations.
Mm-hmm. Now that Mr. Reynolds Sr., one of the fellows at the plant a few days ago was telling me that Mr. Reynolds Sr. had bought this original plant in 1919, I believe, on 28th and Hale, and that was the start of what today is, you know, an unbelievable corporation. That one little plant. Do you remember what some of their first products were? What did they get into business for?
I can't answer that. That's an authority. I've heard rumors that they did begin to manufacture a cleansing product at one time. Along with other products,
mm-hmm.
but I do recall many of the people talking about the company's lead foil lines and they run an operation where they made condenser foil. And I understand too that they rolled tin and used it for certain purposes. Then, of course, they got into the aluminum part of it. That was back during the, with a lot of time of referred to the defense efforts,
mm-hmm.
where we furnished aluminum products to a number of the foreign countries, including France, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. When you came in 1940, what did they have a primary product at that point?
Yes, we at that time, when I went to work for the Reynolds Metals Company, we were very much involved in producing the sheet aluminum for the fighter planes, and many of the heavy gauge aluminum was used even in the fighter pilots' cockpits as protective measures, and we shipped the metal to the people that the countries that were the allies of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, back in them days, we had the security in the plants where that the government officials would just make sure that all defense plants abided by the rules and regulations laid down by the government for that purpose at that time.
Mm-hmm. So that was pretty much what was occupying them during the 40s, during World War II.
Right.
When you came to the company, what was your first position?
My first position was to sweep the floor.
Oh.
I went in there at 50 cents an hour and made $20 a week.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, no. How long did you stay with that?
I stayed there for about 2 days sweeping the floor until I decided I could do something better, and I challenged the foreman on it, and he gave me a smart aleck answer, but I got a better job out of it and was put on as a helper of the various equipment. And I was then promoted to sort of an overseer of all the operators in a big department that had about 50 diversified operations. And then I got active in the union and became the shop steward of the department.
And when did the union come into the plant? Was that before you came?
That was before my time.
Late
30s? I understand it was in 1937.
Okay. But through your job then, you became active in the union.
Right.
Okay. And became a shop steward?
Shop stewards. I first became very active in the labor movement's effort to collect steel for the war effort. We volunteered, and the company furnished trucks and the truck drivers, and we furnished the muscles. We would take jackhammers and dig up the old cars rails all over the city, and we collected scrap from everywhere. Even I remember a number of us moved some heavy safes out of certain places on Main Street for scrap purposes, where the safes were so heavy when we rolled them across the sidewalks, they would break the sidewalk. But we collected streetcar rails, all kinds of metal that could be used in the war effort, and this went on for weeks.
Was that donated to the war effort? Donated. Out of loyalty to the war?
Yes,
and to
but
the
all of the work was donated by the labor movement. Mm-hmm. And they scrap drives. And
that's what started your interest in the labor movement?
That's
was being
right.
Involved in that?
Involved in that, and then I helped organize other things that were necessary in the labor movement at that particular time. And as a result of it, I became the first union I ever belonged to. And I became interested in it, and today I'm their president business representative. Mm-hmm.
Does it still maintain the same title and the same union number, as I noticed was out on the building as I came in?
No, we at one time were known as the Federal Labor Union, Local number 19388, and we were a part of the International Council of Aluminum Workers Unions. Mm-hmm. Now, the AFL back in them days would grant the title to a union to be known as an international union. You had to prove that you was big enough to take care of your own business. Mm-hmm. It took us a number of years to convince the American Federation of Labor at that time that we were big enough to take care of our own business. And which will give you some history of that, I'm going to let you use one of our yearbooks back in 1948 that shows a picture of William Green and George Meany. And our officers back in that time, I'm the first vice president of the International Union back in them times.
Oh, my goodness.
So that'll give you some history of how we became an international union.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, at the point that you came into the company in 1940, did the Reynolds Company already have subsidiaries in other places, or was this company, this building down on 28th and Yale, was that still their only building? Were they already branching out?
They had already begun branching out when I went to work for the company, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How many branches do they have at this point in time?
Ooh, I couldn't answer that. I know they've got branches in about 40 of our 48 states, and we've got the International Aluminum Company. We've got operations in foreign countries, and it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
J. Lewis Reynolds, I think, is the vice president in charge of Reynolds International, and we have the various interests in the bauxite mines in Jamaica and different places like that.
Gosh. But this particular plant at 28th and Hale in the Parkland area, that was the original plant. That was where the Reynolds company started. Okay. You were telling me rather an interesting story about the introduction of the aluminum foil, the product that whenever I think of Reynolds, I always think of the kitchen aluminum foil. Could you tell me something about that, and about what year was that? And I believe that occurred here in Louisville, right?
Yes, but now it wasn't the introduction of aluminum foil. This was the introduction of what a lot of people referred to as a kitchen foil.
Mm.
Now, aluminum foil was used in the early years of the company, it's for cigarette wrapping, candy wrapping, and all of this. Mm-hmm. This was a new use for it
the
kitchen wrap. And that's, when that come out, I think it come out prior to the year of 1950. But our organization, or it was my idea that we should help introduce this foil because we felt it was a good product, and we felt that the introduction to the people in the city of Louisville would help us have more job security here in the city.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of it, we canvassed all of our workers, and including the craft workers in Reynolds, and we took a big city map and mapped out the canvassing area for each employee and each volunteer, and we met with them individually and in groups and give them what we felt would be an appropriate speech of introduction to their neighbors to introduce the foil. We talked to the company about our idea and got the company to bear the expense of printing up the samples. Then we bought up enough shopping bags and printed on the outside of the shopping bags that it was a joint program between the company and the unions to introduce the foil. We filled each shopping bag with sufficient enough samples to introduce to the neighbors and the housewives and the occupants of the homes to show our product, and along with that we had pamphlets of the uses of it. Many of our people were invited into the homes, and they themselves come back with many ideas that were introduced and the uses of the foil. And they got to meet their neighbors, and one of the unique things that we found out about this canvassing program was that many of the people wanted to extend their canvassing. They got to know so many people and meet so many interesting people, they wanted to continue to do it. We found this to be especially true in many of the women and many of the, at that time, long-term employees of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember one of the things that we talked about so much back in them days, the fact that they could cut an onion and wrap it in foil and it wouldn't smell up the ice boxes back
then. And that was a big deal.
If you recall, back in them days, there were still many ice boxes around instead of refrigerators.
I just can't imagine it, because that's just such a part of everyday life now.
Yes.
And that product is. That's phenomenal. And all these were company employees, union people who volunteered extra time away from work to canvass their neighborhoods and pass out the samples.
Right. They didn't get paid. Nobody was paid any time, any salary or extra bonuses in any way for doing this type of work.
I just can't help but feel like it's an unusual company situation to get that kind of support and loyalty and time from people. Or maybe it's a sign of support for the union. I don't know. That's
well, it I just don't know that this day and time that you could really do put on a program like that. Everybody seems to be too busy. And I don't know that the kind of loyalty is continuing on that we had back in them days. I do believe that some of the newer workers get their roots down and continue working for Runnels Metals Company. They will turn in to be loyal employees after a time. But the youngster coming in off of the street today, he doesn't know the history of the company, and most of them aren't aware of what the benefits that have been negotiated over the years really amount to until after they've had some start raising a family, getting some obligations,
right,
and experiencing the many benefits that are included in the union contracts of today.
Well, one of the company fellows told me that they just don't have much of an employee turnover except for retirees, that the benefits are so good that people, once people get on, they stay with their jobs. I thought that was kind of significant.
It is, and it's true. We have an awful time sometime when we, during back in the days that our employment wasn't as stable as it is today, when our members would be laid off, they would have an awful time getting other companies to consider them for employment, because when Reynolds would call back, they would leave the other companies to come back at Reynolds, and they didn't like to employ the laid off Reynolds employees, and you could understand why.
But yet those companies didn't offer what Reynolds did, so obviously that's why people left.
This is true, and again, I think that you'll find that in the aluminum industry, which Reynolds has played an intricate part down through the years, and we've always had one of the best pension plans, best benefit plans as far as insurance and other benefits, such as supplemental unemployment benefits. Reynolds has always been one of the first in that field. And when a person got a few years, as I explained, that they get their roots down. After you get so much seniority in Runnels, you've got a lot to lose if you don't come back and take care of your original investment, which is your investment for your future security. And this has played an awfully important part in the success of the Runnels people here in the city of Louisville.
You were telling me, too, before we had started the interview, that there was a danger at one time of the company closing down. Was that after the canvassing thing, or what period of time was that?
This has been true over the years, because, as we refer to it, Reynolds began during the wartime years. And I guess that their huge factories were government-owned at that time. And when we converted from the wartime operations into the domestic operations, peacetime operations, so a lot of changes had to be made. New products had to come into being. Many of the plants that the Reynolds Metals Company operated had been built by government supervisors, and they were, of course, had to be purchased as wartime surplus. I personally appeared before the Senate Hearing Committee on the $700 million disposal of aluminum plants on behalf of Reynolds Metals Company. And
after
I've got
World War II.
Yes, and I've got the speeches and the letters that I made back in them years in trying to help the company get control of some of the operations and plants to maintain some employment here in the city of Louisville. But back in them days, it was touch and go. These companies had to convert quickly to domestic operations, had to have the products, had to have the customers to sell them to, and we went from 5,400 workers down pretty rapidly to, say, 3,000, and then reduced. At one time, we reduced ourselves to almost about 700 employees. And
now, during the wartime effort, there wasn't just this plant number one on 28th and Hale. There were how many operations were going in the city of Louisville alone?
We, as best I can recall, we had approximately 11 different operations here in the city.
And almost 6,000 employees.
Right, and they consist of extrusion operations, fabrication plants, one of them and two of them for airplane parts that were later on converted into pot and pan divisions. And we have gone through a number of conversions. We have manufactured deep freezes, aluminum boats, all kinds of automotive parts, and various other domestic type products. And we have manufactured and fabricated parts for many other manufacturing firms. This has been tough competitive business. And naturally, as depressions hit, some businesses didn't survive. And we lost many of the operations, and we converted what was one of the original airplane fabricating plant into a plant that manufactured complete buildings, and we shipped from Plant 12 here all over the country. Many of the building components that have built some of the many buildings in Chicago and Los Angeles, here in the city of Louisville, we have a building at, I believe, at 3rd and Liberty, or thereabouts, one of the churches built. That was built and anodized in the plant in Plant 12 on 18th Street. We had the largest anodizing operation in the whole world at Plant 12.
Anodizing. Now what's that?
That is where that we would dip, well, like the service station across the street here. It could dip a whole side of that into there and anodize it, which by electronics or electrode charges would put the color into the aluminum.
Oh.
Yeah. Huh. And, of course, we finally found that the conversion just wasn't good enough to stay in that type of business, and the company lost a lot of money trying to get into the building products. Now, we're still into the building products, but in various degrees, not on that larger scale. But I think if a little bit of research will show you many of the many, many buildings in Chicago, New York, that have been made right here in the city of Louisville.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they made that many products or had been in that many different areas. That's phenomenal. Well, we're when they converted after the war effort and the employees went down from almost 6,000 to, at one time said, approximately 700, then was it that conversion that threatened plant number one at 28th and Hale? Were they just not making enough money, or were they skeptical about it?
Well, it's a number of factors contributed to that. We had a bunch or a whole lot of equipment that was purchased by the Reynolds Metals Company from Germany. And many of the mills were known as Smith Mills, coil rolling mills. This equipment, over the years, became obsolete. Took one operator or the helper, possibly, to each piece of equipment. The modern equipment that we use today, one mill can outplace and outdo maybe 50 of the other mills. Huh. And during the Depression, the money wasn't available for the necessary equipment. We weren't maintaining our pace within the foil industry, and the company had to consider what operations would be closed down versus which operations were going to be maintained. And ours was one of the ones that were first big decision was to close Plant 1. Mm-hmm. After much effort and talking between the various groups, company and the union and their engineers, Plant 1 began to show a different image. Mm-hmm. Money was found to put into new equipment, and many things was done to get us back into competition, and as a result of it we have one of the best operations in the foil division today. Now, it took a lot of doing to bring that about. Many factors contributed to the success. I'm not trying to say that the union did it all. The union did play an important part. And I don't want to say that this union by itself did this. Runnels has contracts with, at that time, about 14 other unions working in the same plants. The craft workers, the machinists, the electricians, the painters, the pipe fitters, the various others have their own individual contracts. Mm-hmm. And it had to be back in them days, and still is today, a challenge on any company's part to be able to maintain contracts with the various unions and not suffer too many work stoppages as a result thereof. So I think with the company, the various unions, and our union, which of course we have the majority of people in the production workers union, have had to work together with preventative measures to bring about the success that we are enjoying today.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to imagine at one time, you know, that it was dying out. How many years did you actually work out of plant number one?
Approximately 2 years.
Then moved to other positions within the company?
No, I became a full-time representative almost immediately. I was responsible and helped set up their original office in the Tyler Building on Jefferson Street. Mm. And then we moved from the Tyler Building to the Washington Building at 4th and Market Street. Mm-hmm. And then from the building at 4th and Market to the old Henry Clay Hotel. And I was responsible in talking the hotel management and converting the whole 4th floor for union purposes. Mm-hmm. And they built it in at considerable expense at union offices, and the original ballroom was redecorated and rehabilitated. It was the Union Hall. Then later on it was sold to the YWCA, and it just didn't seem that the union officials and the many union members would be compatible with the young ladies in the YWCA, so that ended that affair.
So you had to move out of there, huh?
Moved out of there onto 4th Street, up the street, and then we bought this building and remodeled this building.
And it's at 2901 South
2901.
Okay.
And all of this work that you see in here, it was done by our members.
Mm-hmm. Volunteer kind of thing?
Volunteer type of thing. There's the other work that we had to have done by contractors, mm-hmm. you know, such mm-hmm. as. But the paneling and all of it was done by us. Yeah, I worked my tail off in this.
You did, putting this up, so you want somebody to appreciate it, huh? Oh, gosh. Well, since our project's you know, primarily geared around, you know, the Parkland area and the businesses and industries that have made up the area over the years. I wanted to ask you, you came to the plant in 1940, so you're around 1940, 1941, 1942, right around there.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything specific about the area surrounding plant number one at that time? You know, what kind of an area it was? Was that considered a good place to work?
I think yes, it was a good place to work. And back in them days, the Virginia Avenue, which was the continuation of Oak Street at that time, was quite some elite neighborhood, you might say. And of course, in the West End, they had the old Fountain Ferry amusement park. And then many companies held the various picnics down there. Mm-hmm. And I can recall that the Runnels out on Cane Run Road owned quite a bit of property that they, from time, well, way back when, would let the employees farm. They would allot so many areas to the various employees that would go out and have their own gardens.
Oh.
They were, I think, the neighborhood itself was, we always considered, was a very good neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I feel is going to come back to be a good neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Were the in the early 40s, were the neighbors, people surround that lived in the homes surrounding the plant area, were they pretty positive about having a plant there? Did they mind? Did they feel like the rentals wrecked the neighborhood, or that having a factory across the street or a block away deteriorated? Did you ever get any feelings that way?
We never felt that way. I don't believe that that was ever felt there. One of the company doctors was back over on behind, lived behind the plant. His name was Dr. Swankhouse. I think many of the employees lived in and around the plant, mm-hmm. And I think the there was never any friction that I can recall around there. There was four or five various restaurants and places that fed the employees, mm-hmm. And
they were obviously benefiting from having the plant.
It seemed like that the neighborhood prospered by the plant being there.
Because I know the reason I asked that question, I know today, you know, so many of the neighborhood's people are so picky, whether it's going to mean employment for them or their neighbors or not, they just get very, very hostile about interrupting a neighborhood, putting in a gas station, or having the possibility of a plant. In the Highlands area where I live, if you talk about putting a plant in there, whether there were half the people on the block unemployed, they just have cardiac arrests over it. And I wondered, you know, if that was the kind of response, or if people needed the jobs and they saw that as a positive step and they were glad to have the plant there and developing.
Well, we never felt back in the early days that this was true. Mm-hmm. However, I think in times went on, I feel that one of the contributing factors to the Plant 12 area, that's the 18th Street, 18th and Burnett, the neighbors got hostile towards the plant, but I kind of feel that that was the promotion of the real estate people. They even, somebody was influential enough to have put around in that neighborhood parking meters and no parking signs where the employees could not park on the street. And we, along with the officials of the company, visit the city fathers many times, let them know what they were doing. And the prices on the property skyrocketed. And there was a number of suits against the company because of the heavy equipment that we operated in the plant. The company had to pay out much money on a goodwill basis to try to keep the neighbors happy, but it just seemed that it whet their appetite. And as a result of that, when we lost Plant 12, houses that they were asking $25,000 for, hit rock bottom that you could probably buy in that neighborhood now for less than $2,000 if they don't give them away. There's nothing there. Mm-hmm. And this has been a bad thing for the city. Now, I have felt for a long time that the city officials have not treated the Reynolds Metals Company correctly. When they remodeled the old rod and bar mill at 3rd and Eastern Parkway and made it their office building. And when the company grew too large for that, they proposed to rezone some property out around Anchorage to put their multi-million-dollar corporate office in that area. The State Federation of Labor Officials, the AFL regional officials, along with our unions, met with the city fathers trying to get down to rezone the property to make it possible for Reynolds to stay in the city of Louisville. We had company officials, their public relation people, drafting up the various plans and the buildings to go in that area. And the city officials refused to rezone the area. And as a result of that, Richmond, Virginia got our home office, which they have two beautiful buildings taking up many, many acres of ground.
And employing many, many people.
And we had a few of our city officials that didn't want the Reynolds office building in the Anchorage area.
Mm-hmm. And that's just absolutely unbelievable when over the last couple of years they've been trying this revitalizing, trying to get businesses back into Louisville. And
well, you wouldn't believe it. I think that the city officials actually, by refusing to do that, lost one of the best opportunities this city ever had.
Yeah, goodness sakes.
And it's just unbelievable that they could do that, but that's what they did.
So I was thinking in terms of not only the business that you produce out of a building, but where the employees eat, where the employees live, where they buy their products, how many people it actually employs in an area. That's phenomenal. They were willing to give that up. Is that the Richmond, Virginia?
No, that's what they proposed here.
Oh. And they didn't want it out in the Anchorage
that's
area?
Right.
Oh, that is spectacular.
Here is this complete file, if you'd like to look at it. Even where the Department of Research and State of Kentucky tried to get them to do all of this, but they wouldn't do it.
That's just phenomenal. Well, I wanted to ask you a couple more questions about plant number one, too, while I was thinking of it. I noticed when I've been out to the plant the last couple of weeks, it seems like they're making a remarkable effort to pick up that area.
They are.
Around the plant, it's clean, it's very, very attractive looking, and it looks like they've got a good relationship with the neighbors immediately around them. It looks like there's some revitalizing going on. Do you know if the company has a policy toward that? Or is that just the way the company is overall?
Well, I think you'll find that the company does a lot in every place that they locate to do this. And I think it's a healthy trend. Mm-hmm. And I believe that the individual plant managers have a lot to do with this. Vince Senior, who is the present plant manager, has certainly displayed a lot of enthusiasm towards this direction and done a marvelous job.
Good public relations for the community, I think.
Ed Seward, the plant manager that preceded him, was the same type of a fellow. And he done a lot towards the same thing. His relations was good with the people. And we just hope it will continue to improve.
Because I noticed just even a block away, you can see the debris on the streets and in the yards, and you don't see that immediately surrounding the last plant. And you don't see it on the sidewalk. It doesn't look like employees have tossed their lunch bags out the door. Nothing. I was really impressed with that. You made a comment, too, about that you felt the neighborhood was going to pick up again. You know, so much of the area around there has deteriorated over the years. Are you just hopeful of that, or do you think there's some signs that?
No, I think I've watched the neighborhood go down to a low level, and I've noticed the improvements as it comes back to a degree in and around the plant. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that other people will pick up the enthusiasm and do something to do it. I think that the city officials could help it. They would devote more time to it. I've not got a vendetta against the city officials for that. But I just think that it goes like many of the signs that you see in various stores. We work hard to get a customer. We work harder to keep them. Now, while the city is trying to attract new businesses, they ought to be working awful hard to keep the businesses that they've got. And that means that a lot of attention should be devoted to the areas where these people are. You take many of the companies right now up east and everywhere else are going out into the rural areas. Many of them are moving south because they can get ground, property, parking areas, they get don't run into all of the pollution problems that you do in a metropolitan city. They don't run into the parking problems. They don't run into the vandalism and everything else that we've got in a metropolitan city. Mm-hmm. Now, I think when you look at this, where these companies have to build their own parking lots, pave them, light them, guard them, and are challenged by every official, pollution people, and everything else, companies are constantly looking at these things, and they're going to evaluate whether or not it's advantageous and smart money-wise to continue in the roles that they're playing in these metropolitan cities, or following the trend to the runaway shops, or not necessarily runaway shops, but for economy reasons to move plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to begin to weigh just how much is the grief worth.
The aluminum industry has got a new challenge. We've got the environmentalists that's have to ban the cans, and people that are trying to pass legislation that they don't realize can put people out of work. I think there's got to be some other way than just saying somebody going to ban the cans. Mm-hmm. Because this means a big part of this country's economy. Mm-hmm. And we've just got to continually fight this, and so do the companies. Mm-hmm. Now, we just finished our contract negotiations. Our contract is not yet a month old. We finished our negotiations in Miami Beach, Florida, and got another wonderful contract with a company. On the other hand, the Alcoa company has shut down one of their extrusion plants in Cressona, Pennsylvania, and have, as of the 28th day of May, they laid off approximately 650 employees. The plant is out of operation today, and they will have to retire them people under the contracts that we have, which will mean many millions of dollars to the company. Now, if they could afford to shut down plants like that and either expand other plants or perhaps get out of the extrusion part of it, then we all better be looking at some preventative measures to keep it from happening elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And this is a challenge that the worker has in the plant, the city officials have. It's a joint problem. They're just going to have to work a lot closer together, or we're going to lose other operations in these big cities. I'm not a crepe hanger, but facts are facts. I've been around enough to see enough trends to where you've got to look at it.
Yeah. Crepe hanger. That's the first time I've heard that in a long time. Well, I think that's about the end of my questions. I'm going to pursue a couple of the leads that you've given me and check with some more of the company people. It's a really interesting history.
I'm going to give you a little bit more to take with you.
Okay. Okay. Thank you an awful lot.